Okay, how's everybody doing today? All right?
We're good.
Good. My name is Chadwick Knight. I'm basically going to be talking to you today about a study I did on household food insecurity and medication scrimping among U.S. adults with diabetes. I basically co-authored this paper with Dr. Probst, Dr. Leese, and Dr. Sonia Jones, all from the University of South Carolina, from the Arnold School of Public Health. And, of course, in terms of presenter disclosures, I really have no relationships to disclose at this time. So with that in mind, now that we can begin, our paper, was, as I said earlier, was on food insecurity. So we basically defined it within this paper as individuals and or families in a household adjusting their dietary intakes or preferences due to a lack of physical or economic resources. According to a study by the USDA analysis in 2012, 14.9% of American households were food insecure at least one point during 2011. Furthermore, studies indicate that the actual level of household food insecurity is higher among individuals with chronic illnesses, and that vulnerable populations are more likely to experience food insecurity, including households that are below the poverty level, in addition to Black and Hispanic households. Studies also suggest that food insecurity affects the type and amounts of groceries that households consume. For example, food insecure households are often decreased the variety of foods consumed, while increasing the consumption of energy-dense groceries that contain refined grains, added sugars, and or saturated trans fats. Furthermore, food insecure houses also typically consume fewer servings of the actual daily recommended levels of fruits, vegetables, and dairy products when compared to more secure households. Studies also found that basically food insecurity is linked to poor metabolic control among persons with diabetes and self-reported episodes of hypoglycemia. Food insecure adults are also less likely to purchase costly medication or adhere to recommended prescription guidelines when compared with their counterparts. So in such instances, when given the choice between food and medication for individuals diagnosed with diabetes, can often result in healthcare utilization increases or unwanted trips to the hospital or to the ER. Our work basically expands on some of the prior studies that I previously described, and that we focused on basically persons with diabetes. Also, we provided more detail about the types of medication restriction and included patient-reported clinician behaviors such as reported glucose screening. In addition, we also utilized data from the 2011 National Health Interview Survey to address the following questions. What is the prevalence of food security in a national sample of adults with diabetes? And is food association with medication scrimping, that is basically failing to obtain or use all of your prescribed medications for financial reasons. As you can see here, these are some of the independent dependent variables that we utilized within the study. Food security was our independent variable, and then scrimping was our dependent variable, and was broken down into four different sub-variables, categories, and then all of the other variables that you basically see on the screen here were utilized as control variables for our study. To look those over. In terms of our results, when we looked at the prevalence of food insecurity among adults with diabetes, we found that over a quarter of adults with diabetes are actually food insecure or marginally food insecure. We also found that females are more apt than men to report food insecurity. We also found that Black and Hispanic individuals are more likely to report food insecurity and marginal food insecurity in comparison to whites. Younger age demographics, specifically those between 18 and 44 years of age, were also more apt to report food insecurity and marginal food security. And the majority that reported food insecurity and marginal food security had a high school education or less. More than two-thirds who reported food insecurity fell below the 200% federal poverty threshold, with an additional 13.63% being categorized as marginally food secure. Food insecure and marginally food insecure adults were also more likely to be uninsured when compared to the food secure counterparts, and also similarly, food insecure and marginally food secure adults were more likely to be overweight or obese. Continue on examining our results, when specifically looking at medication scrimping among adults with diabetes, we found that nearly one in five reported some form of medication scrimping. In addition, we also found that prevalence of all scrimping behavior is higher among food insecure and marginally food insecure adults when compared with those that were categorized as food secure. Over a third of adults with diabetes reported either skipping doses of their medication, taking less medication, or delaying medications to save money. In addition, we also noted that slightly less than half, about 45%, affirmed one of the actual scrimping questions as well. When specifically looking at the adjusted relationship between food insecurity and medication scrimping, we found that food insecurity was actually positively and strongly associated with scrimping in the multivariate adjusted analysis. Food insecure and marginal food secure adults had markedly higher odds of medication scrimping in comparison to the food secure respondents. Other factors that were positively associated with scrimping after controlling for food security were being less than 65 years of age, having a mid-range income, being uninsured, living in the South, having a BMI or body mass index of 30 or more, basically being obese, and having a higher number of office visits. In addition, the black or Hispanic race or ethnicity was also positively associated with scrimping in the unadjusted analysis and had a modest negative relationship to scrimping after adjusting for food security. Similarly, having an education less than high school was not associated with scrimping in the unadjusted analysis, but was associated with the reduced odds of scrimping after adjustment. Reflecting back upon these results, we were able to estimate that one in four adults with diabetes lives in either a food secure or marginally food insecure household. That's roughly about 3.4 million people, or a fourth of all adults with diabetes. They basically may have difficulty securing the types of foods that are appropriate to their diet. Furthermore, our study's findings indicate that adults with diabetes who experience food insecurity triage how they spend their money on their medications. And in addition, past studies have also indicated that food security has been linked to metabolic control. However, physicians involved in providing care with diabetes may not be aware of the patient's problems of obtaining food, as we basically found that over 39% of adults with diabetes in our study actually reported their health official had not even discussed their diet with them in the past year. In terms of limitations, our research is basically subject to the limitations associated with survey research, such as recall bias. In addition, food security is a household-level variable, whereas disease control, in this particular case, diabetes, is measured at an individual level. Now, while we also know that the household as a whole lacked food, we did not know the individual responded, how the individual responded was affected or not. And similarly, along those lines, we did not know whether the actual which medications the respondent within the survey chose to restrict. So. Overall, these findings suggest that food insecurity affects about a fourth of all American adults with diabetes, but as I mentioned earlier, this condition may not be routinely assessed by clinicians. So roughly one in five adults with diabetes reported no discussion of their diet with their care provider during the past year. So with this in mind, basically food security screenings during office visits can assist primary care providers by identifying patients who either need food assistance referrals who are unable to comply with certain prescribed treatments. Furthermore, the findings from the study suggest the care process for adults with diabetes should include either a food-oriented referral when needed. As most medical providers are familiar with medication programs for low-income persons, we basically suggest that it also be prudent for providers to become familiar with supplemental food programs. So, for example, a physician or staff member can basically guide patients to either federally, state, or community-funded programs that would help improve their food security. Examples would include WIC, SNAP, food stamps, Meals on Wheels, local food pantries, etc. In addition, these referrals could also include the expansion of diet counseling for adult patients with diabetes, particularly for individuals that are more at risk for food insecurity, and it could also include financial as well as nutritional guidance as well. In conclusion, food security is both prevalent among adults with diabetes and is also highly associated with medication compliance. Even in an age of healthcare reform today that we have, innovative community-based programs are still needed to basically address some of these twin concerns and secure the best possible outcomes for patients. And I think I got the time limit there. Actually, we looked at Berkowitz is one of the most, and there's a couple in California that are the most relevant that we utilized in the study, and they actually noticed that incidents reflecting adults with diabetes and medication scrimping are more prevalent at the end of the month, at the second and the end of the month, basically when checks are you know, coming in, welfare, whatnot. Say again? We did not go in that direction, but that's definitely something we could in the future, because we'd like to continue this line of work down the road. But
they're basically responding to a question about whether you do it at all. So it's not like they're asking about the time.
Yeah. The other reason also is this, with every survey too, as with NHIS, the data that you can pull is those particular variables that you look at limit what you can, and in this case, we might have to go utilize another type of survey measure method, because that was not one that we were able to use within our study. But we did, of course, you know, note it within the introduction and discussion.
Did South Carolina expand Medicaid?
We chose not to.
Unless you guys come anyway.
Yeah. We abstained from that.
I see, because I thought it might improve if you went back, you know. If you redid the study, it would be interesting. There's a lot of these studies that are coming out that are being presented at the APHA that don't reflect the change in January. Like in Maryland, things got a lot better for us in the short run, at least, with Medicaid expansion. So people are less likely to have the problem with their meds. But, you know, I wondered if you knew what meds they were on. Do you know if they used insulin or oral agents?
Well, what we do is when, because the sample was relatively low, we included for our variable of having diabetes, we included basically both being on insulin and also for people that reported basically being type 2. So we combined those, and it was a little over 3,200 for that. But
and you don't know exactly the outcomes of their diabetes, right? You don't know how poorly controlled they are.
The factors that we were able to obtain weren't in. Something that we could pull from the actual. That was one of the factors that we looked at was people that are more, as I said earlier, people that are more prone to being food insecure, marginally food insecure, are those that are uninsured. Because what we did is we broke it down into either private, public, including Medicaid, and uninsured, and people that were actually on Medicaid did not have as much problems as the people that were uninsured.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, let's have the next speaker.
Thank you. Thank you.